So a very happy summer, everybody. Chris Barrow here with what I suppose is going to be the July edition of the Two Reds Are Better Than One podcast. I have to say, my view of the dental landscape at the moment is that everybody is, I think, a little bit of summer madness, that things are a little bit interrupted by people coming and going on vacation, taking time off to watch Glastonbury on the television and other music festivals. I think we've all taken the time out to enjoy a bit of sunshine. Ashley Latter, you're not even in your office. You're sat in a car. Where are you, mate?
So, yeah, I'm on the M6 toll service station. Can't remember what it's called, actually. Whatever it is, it's a big one. And so I delivered a lecture yesterday in Oxford, and finished it and decided I was so tired. I was on my knees yesterday. Decided to stay over, and then I'm just heading back to Manchester, where I'm doing some lecturing from 3 o'clock till probably 9:30, 10 o'clock this evening. So I'm making that journey home. But I just found out that the M6 is closed at Wolverhampton. So so a long one.
Nice.
That's where I am today. How are you anyway?
I'm absolutely brilliant, but I do need to warn our listeners that what we will not be discussing today is work-life balance or effective time management, because Ashley and Latter and I are absolutely crap at it at the moment. We're working too hard, too many hours. We're as bad as each other. I don't know what's wrong with us, Ash. I really don't know what's wrong with us. I think we need to bring a guest on who can introduce some calm and serenity into our proceedings. Yeah. Do you think that would be a good idea?
Do you know what we need? We need something. You know, like when you sort your diary out and you're putting gigs in, you need somebody to like a special app to say, no, don't put that one in. It's too much for you.
You're right.
Oh dear.
The thing is that our respective spouses would be more than happy to do that, but unfortunately, we're not going to take any notice of them because we don't pay them any fees. Let's bring some calm and maturity and serenity into this conversation, because we are actually welcoming back a part two. We've got with us Claire Nightingale from Queen's Gate Orthodontics. Claire was a guest on the show not many months ago now, and we realised by the end of that conversation that we actually had a lot of unfinished business. Welcome back, Claire. How are you?
I'm great, Chris. Thank you very much. Let me just tell you, I can diagnose your problems. You are victims of your own success. My prescription is you should both immediately become failures. That will sort your diaries out. Right, anyway, so now we're going to move on. So, yes, last time we chatted, I was very keen to talk about digitization and how that had transformed my practice. And then I thought afterwards that actually what was more interest to your listeners would be my journey through the acquisition and sale of my practice and what I've learned from that. And Chris, you said to me, through wounds come wisdom. And at that starting point, I will give you the synopsis of my attempt at buying a practice. And whilst it was miserable at the time, what I learned from that, and again, I bang on about resilience and turning negatives into positives. And this is how it played out for me.
So, Claire, let me just jump in, because what I want to say to our listeners is what you're going to hear next, if you have already bought a practice, if you are thinking about buying a practice, if you have already sold a practice, if you are thinking that you will ever sell your practice, what you're going to hear in the next 35 minutes or so is going to be absolutely priceless. So turn everything off, cut off all your devices, find yourself a quiet corner and listen. Claire, you're on.
Right. Let's go back 20 years ago to 2003. Now, what was happening in 2003 politically was that we had just been told that there were going to be massive changes in the NHS, and the days of the FP17 fee per item for service were over, and practices were going to have their own individual contracts, and it was no longer going to be possible to set up a squat practice on the NHS. So that was what was happening politically. What I saw from that at that time professionally, I was qualified. I had finished my accreditation as a consultant. I was waiting for a consultant post. I was working part-time in an NHS specialist practice, and I was hoping to become a partner in a big swanky practice, private practice in central London. Personally, I was pregnant with my second child and had a two-year-old, so there was lots of things going on. But when I heard this news about this change, I could immediately see that the valuations of dental practices were going to rocket and that orthodontist associates were going to be vulnerable. And what I wanted to be, I wanted to be leading that change rather than be led by change. So I felt a sense of urgency to want to acquire a practice. And I decided that the best thing I could do would be to make an offer on the practice that I was currently working in. So I spoke to the boss and I said, I would like to buy your practice. I've been there for 6 years. And he said, great, when you come back from your maternity leave, we will set the project to a timetable. And then a week later, he got killed in a motorcycle accident.
Good God.
Yeah, which was absolutely devastating. So imagine the worst case scenario of a heavily pregnant woman with a two-year-old who had had a stressful pregnancy so far, negotiating with a grieving widow who was being advised by her two teenage children. And neither party had had any experience of selling or buying a practice. So it was a recipe for disaster, really. And indeed, thus it proved to be. And, you know, this short way of summarising what happened to me was that the simple way would be to say we couldn't agree terms. But in fact, other purchases were introduced behind my back and there was an expectation I'd pay inflated rent. And after 15 months of misery, I walked away. And when I walked away...
Do you know what it sounds like, Chris, very quickly? I'm sorry to interrupt there. It sounds like the taker of Man United at the moment, doesn't it?
Claire, I would back you as the owner of the new owner of Manchester United.
It's like a 15-month saga, this, isn't it?
Back on track. Keep going.
Okay, so when I walked away, I was neither sleeping nor eating. I can't remember a thing about my daughter's first 12 months of life, and my weight dropped to 7 stone 5. So that was an absolute trough of misery. However, I say that, as you say, through wounds come wisdom. And ultimately, what I learned from this transaction reaped dividends for me 18 years later. You know, life is a long game and you have to just keep walking towards your goals and ambitions. So what did I learn from this? Well, the first thing I learned from this is that if you want a business transaction to be successful, there has to be trust and transparency on both sides, and you have to collaborate together to achieve mutual benefit for both parties. Now, it's fairly obvious, but I don't see that happening in many transactions. And that is the spirit within which I approach both my purchase and my sale. So very important. You know, the second thing is that catastrophes happen and you have to plan for them. You know, so plan for the worst and hope for the best is a good maxim. Also, when you're an associate, you tend to see the boss earning lots of money and you think that dental practices are an asset. But what I've learned is that in a split second, they can become a liability. You know, and already in my year group from dental school, qualified in 1989, two very sadly have died and two have had strokes. And two of my friends are currently going through fire sales. So it's very important to recognise your liability, particularly if you're a single-handed practitioner. And then the final thing that I've learned from all of these miseries in my life is that you have to protect your health. And that stress is pathological. And there are times in my life, largely associated with trying to buy practices or dealing with staff, that I've developed Graves' disease, which is hypothyroidism, and that was all stress related. And so although I'm absolutely fine now, when I experience an episode of stress, I remove myself until it's resolved. So I think those things are all very, very important. So that's as much as I want to say about my first acquisition, no, or attempt at an acquisition. But yeah. I learned so much from that that's then stood me in steadfastly through the rest of my professional life.
Now, Claire, let me ask you a question. You've gone through 15 months of hell.
Yeah.
And you've got absolutely nothing to show for it at the end of the process. Talk to me about your mindset at that moment.
Well, I mean, I was very, 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 very miserable, very, very depressed. I immediately succumbed to the worst flu of my life. But I was so determined that I would ultimately have my own practice that even when I should really have been in bed, I was dragging myself around streets, going into estate agents, looking, trying to get premises to set up a squat. It would have been madness because lots of people set up squats in that period, 2003 to 2006, and they had difficulty with contract values ever since.
And this with two young children as well.
Well, yes, exactly. I had a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old at this stage. Yeah, of course, it was miserable and it was madness and I should have taken a step out of it. But I'm not that type of person, you know, and I basically, what I did was I tried to create opportunity for myself. A lawyer told me that the only straightforward practice transactions he ever observed were those in retirement, people retiring. Everything else was flawed. So what I did was I wrote a letter to every orthodontist I knew who was approaching retirement age saying I would like be interested in buying their practice. And they all got back to me. I mean, in the end, I didn't buy any of them. But that's what I did. I just kept looking for opportunity. And it took an awful, and I just kept putting one foot in front of the other. But it took a long, long time. And it wasn't for another 9 years, actually, before the right opportunity came my way. And that was in 2012. So I had the very good fortune that somebody who was approaching retirement texted me and asked me if I'd like to come and have a look at his business.
Can I just interrupt there? You know, you said 9 years later and that yeah. someone texts you. Yeah. Is that somebody that you maybe have approached previously beforehand?
I hadn't, but we were connected. He was a specialist orthodontist, and I think everybody knew I was looking. You know,
someone connected you then, is that correct?
Not exactly. He was friendly with another orthodontist whose practice, who had offered me a partnership, and that fell through. So he knew on the grapevine that opportunities that I had explored hadn't come to fruition.
So there's two big lessons here. The first one is, really, the stuff that you did 9 years previously may have just started to pay off, even though it didn't come directly to letter to the person, but indirectly. But the second thing is, I speak to dentists all the time. I don't know if you probably do the same, Chris. Even last night, I was chatting to someone quite late in the night. But I think some dentists nowadays are so impatient. They want to try and get into practice ownership so quickly, and they may be doing the wrong deal. And what you're saying is wait to get the right deal on the table before you decide to buy a practice.
Well, that's what I did. I walked away from 5 purchases. I thought I was useless. I thought I'd never own a practice, but I thought I was a refusing horse. But I just didn't have the right one. And when the right one came, my goodness, did I run with that ball.
So, yeah. You
know, which is probably what we should move on to, because I know time is short.
Yeah.
Let's go. Phase two.
So I bought Queensgate Orthodontics in 2012. It was a paper and pen outfit. I haven't really progressed since the days it was set up as a squat, but it was a lovely little business. And over the next 6 years, I transformed it from a pen and paper operation to a fully digital practice. I doubled the turnover. We won Best Practice in the UK in the 2020 Dentistry Awards. And most importantly, the thing I love the most is that I filmed a little web video for the website starring my son, who was about 12 at the time. And that was inspired by you, Chris. You shared a lovely little video at the British Orthodontic Conference telling a story. And it was so fun compared to the, you know, my name is Claire Nightingale and I've been in this practice for blah, blah. You know, that's so boring. And so I put together a video. I wrote the script. My son's godfather was a professional video editor. He and his mate filmed it. My son acted in it. And it's still on the website today, should anyone want to look. But that's something
I'll have a look at that. I'd love to.
It brings me great joy. So I'd got to the point where I felt that over that 6-year period, 2013 really to 2019, I had achieved all the objectives I could have hoped for as a single-handed individual. And by this time, I was in my early 50s. And so what was happening then, I felt that I had ticked lots of boxes about what I wanted to do. And what was next to me was purely to churn it and earn money. And in fact, then what happened, a friend of mine who was in a very similar position made the decision to sell his private orthodontic practice. And he was younger than me. And there's nothing like someone younger than you taking the next step to really start questions raising in one's mind about what was the future. And what was going on then in 2018, 2019 was that the marketplace was really starting to change and specialist orthodontic practices were starting to lose their referral base. And we were losing our referral base because GDPs were getting in-house orthodontists. Invisalign is big. You know, lots of younger orthodontic dentists are wanting to do their own orthodontics. And my friend decided to sell his practice because one of his referrers stopped referring to his associate, who was his own sister. And my friend said, when a brother stops referring to his own sister, then that is time to make a big change.
Yeah.
And when I heard that, I thought he's absolutely right. He's confirming what I'm seeing as well. And because he had sold, that gave me the opportunity for him to share some of his learning with me. Well, you know, which he did in respect to his regard to his confidentiality agreement. But what I knew from his sale was that he was in a 5-year earnout. So that made me think, okay, so what's my life going to look like in 5 years' time? You know, and in 5 years' time, my youngest child will have left home and be at university. My parents will be in their mid-80s, and my family needs will be different. So I knew that the obligations and responsibilities were going to be more challenging, perhaps, and it was time to get freed up. As I said in the last podcast, I've had the practice valued at this stage twice in 3 years. And the valuation was on a very steep trajectory. And because I had this learning from back in 2003, where I knew that the valuation of the practice was all based on my personal health, and that if something dreadful happened to me, not only would my husband have to mop up the business, but the family would lose the value of the practice as well. So I made a very deliberate decision that it was time to cash in my chips. You know, that's what when people said to me, why are you selling? You know, you're still quite young and you've got working life ahead of you and obligations of family. And I said, well, I want to cash in my chips. It was a very strong feeling before my luck changed, cash in my chips, which I learned very bitterly all those years ago. So that was why I decided to sell the practice. And I kind of think that leads me neatly on to what do I observe other people do, because I think it's very important that individuals think about what they are like and what they want to achieve. And so, you know, what I observe others do, you know, there are some who are serial entrepreneurs and set up squats, sell them on and do that repeatedly. And there are those that build up micro corporates, but I think they're very much in the minority. I mean, you two will know better than me. But what I notice that the majority do is sort of churn in their own practices until they think that they've reached conventional retirement age or they want to stop working. And then they look around for a willing purchaser. And that inevitably leads to a few years of misery, really, as sales fall through and it's hard to find people. So I think the approach that I've taken, which was more by luck than design, I think, and on the basis of my previous experience, is that I would suggest that people think very hard about working extremely hard in their practices to maximise the value by the time the owners are in their early 50s, late 40s, early 50s, and then cashing the asset when the market is buoyant, you know, when it's the right time in the marketplace, because you can still continue to earn money as an associate with money in the bank, no liability, and your exit strategy secured. Mm. I can't see what there's not to like about that.
So
how many years would you sort of think about, you know, let's say you've got somebody today who's, you know, a business owner. How many years would you say that they should start planning about before they start cashing the chips in?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as we discussed in the last podcast, you know, my advice was start with the end in mind.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in many ways, I'm disappointed that I only owned a practice for 9 years, you know, and perhaps if I'd started much, much younger, I would have been that serial entrepreneur. But I made an age-related decision. I made a marketplace decision. I made a decision based on, you know, cashing in the asset, because an asset is only an asset on paper. It doesn't become an asset until the money's in the bank.
Yeah.
Claire, just remind us of the exact date on which the practice was sold.
Okay. Well, I sold on the 3rd of December 2021. But I brought it, I made the decision to sell. Well, 2019, I was thinking about it. 2020, during the pandemic, I started preparing all the paperwork. And then we came back, we got back onto our feet. And I actually I had my first offer in March 2021. So what happened was, a friend of mine was the orthodontic acquisitions manager for Portman. And I started talking with him at the British Orthodontic Conference in 2020. Well, no, there wouldn't have been one then. We must have engaged by text or something. I can't remember. But he said, "Oh, show me your, you know, share your books, and I'll give you some tips about how you might increase its attractiveness for Portman." And then that came an offer. I was very happy with the offer. I was very happy with Portman. I originally started going down the sale of a private sale to them. But a friend of mine who had sold to Dentex just contacted me out of the blue and said, no, you must talk to Dentex. I love Dentex. I'm really happy with them. I will introduce you. And then the other thing I started to think about was that selling the practice, it was going to be the biggest asset sale of my life. And why was I doing it unrepresented, really? So I went back to Luke Moore of Dental Elite, and he had valued it twice for nothing, you know, and I didn't feel comfortable that he was going to get nothing out of the deal, given that he had given me advice that had helped me maximize the value of the practice. So I went back to talk to Luke, he made a proposal, and Luke then represented me and took it back to both Dentex and Portman. So we had a short while, a sort of, you know, exchange of offers, increased offers. Having someone understanding the books was very helpful, because when I saw them, what the valuation was based on, I was able to strip out some non-recurring costs, like a website development fee, that sort of thing. Now, when you're talking about multiples, paying careful attention to what is written down as a fixed cost versus a recurring cost has a massive impact on the valuation. Yeah. So we got to July 2021. And one thing I liked about Dentex very much was that their acquisition manager came in and immediately saw a way to make the practice better that I hadn't seen within his budget, which was, he basically said, we can make your practice administrator, practice reception, practice manager on an increased salary, but we still have money in the budget to employ another administrator 3 days a week. And I hadn't seen this. And I just thought, how stupid am I not to have observed the fact that I'm weak on administration and it wouldn't cost that much to become strong. Anyway, so I like this approach of how to make things better. And in July 2021, I signed heads of terms with Dentex. Now, I thought that I was super organized and I had all my documentation scanned in various folders. And once I appointed my solicitor, within 24 hours, my solicitor had everything that I thought he needed for the practice sale. You know, I was gaming to try and be the quickest sale that they had ever done.
Yeah.
What I hadn't appreciated was that there were many practices ahead of me in the queue, you know, there were a number of things that happened, which is that, first of all, it took quite a long time for me to become the priority practice for them to acquire. So I had to be patient, which is not my forte, I have to say. But between July and September that year, I had weekly meetings with the acquisition manager, the woman who was going to become my business development manager, and various other people. And we had weekly teams meeting to keep the practice on track. And I said to you that I approached it in a very collaborative spirit. And I think this is super important, because the moment I signed heads of terms, I behaved as if they were already the owners of the practice.
Yeah.
Every decision I made, I did it in discussion with them in these weekly meetings. So there were changes in staffing, things like, could I make an extra pension contribution, this sort of thing. I took every significant decision, I ran by them. And of course, they always said yes. They said, you know, it's your practice, Claire, you know, but thank you for discussing it with us.
Can I ask you just a question? And there's a reason why I'm asking it. And I don't want you to share figures because, you know, it'd be unethical. But was the offer you got from, because you got advice from somebody, was the second offer a lot better than the first?
Well, yeah, it went upwards, yes, for sure. Yeah, it was definitely worth my while. It was definitely worth my while to be represented.
Getting really good advice.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, you know, sometimes you just need someone to have difficult conversations on your behalf. I mean, not there were any, but you just need a sounding board now and again and a little bit of support. And it was worth doing.
Yeah.
But you know, although I thought I had all the documentation was endless. It was like doing a diploma. in my spare time, as well as running the practice. And there were endless spreadsheets, this, that, and the other, that all had to be uploaded into a data room. And I had to make some significant investments in the practice as well, because, you know, I only had one mop, shock, horror, you know, and I had to go off, of course, and buy all the proper four mops and colour-coded buckets. And I had to build a cleaning cupboard to house my mops, you know, this sort of thing. And, you know, the air conditioning, the boiler was knackered. And, you know, I'm not the sort of person that's going to hand over something that's immediately going to fail. So I invested in the practice up to the very day that it was sold. So
I think the moral of that particular part of the story, and certainly I've heard it from so many other places, is do not underestimate the level of due diligence that's going to be involved. It's going to be a lot more than you can possibly imagine.
Absolutely. And it made my purchase look like a Mickey Mouse experience, where the books were on one paper and there was no handover of things like the website password, you know, stuff like that. Anyway, so I approached, I had 3 months where I was very collaborative. But you see, because I am such an impatient person, the moment a decision is made, I want it actioned. So knowing that we needed a part-time receptionist, I was very keen that we got one in. And I started, this is where I think my story is of interest, because what I did is I started the recruitment process in collaboration with my business development manager before I had even completed the sale. Okay, so we got to the point where we were about to invite 3 people for a trial as a receptionist. And each of those people knew that their ultimate employer was going to be Dentex, but my staff didn't know I was selling. And I really struggled with this because I love my team and I felt devious that I was negotiating about something that would impact on them without their knowledge, you see. And Dentex kept holding me back. I wanted to tell them and they said, no, wait. But I decided it was absolutely unacceptable that I'd be bringing people in for a trial on reception who had knowledge about the practice and my team didn't. So what we did was I had people coming in on a Monday afternoon for a trial. So Monday lunchtime, I sat the staff down and I had thought very carefully about how I was going to tell them that I was going to sell the practice. And I made absolutely certain I used very, very positive language like opportunity, you know, and, you know, bringing, you know, and changes in the marketplace that left us vulnerable and that I was bringing the practice into the umbrella of a large organisation to support us and to protect the practice. And I absolutely avoided words like retirement, exit strategy and cashing in my chips. You know, so I thought very carefully about the way I was going to talk to my staff. And of course, you know, there was one of my team who had worked for corporate, you know, his face dropped and he said, oh, no, not a corporate. But I had the most wonderful stroke of luck, which is my lovely nurse said, she opened her mouth and said, Claire, I would do exactly the same in your position and I trust you to make the right decisions. And I could have kissed her, you know, and I have thanked her profusely for this, because the moment one team member expresses great positivity, you are home and dry, because no one else can say, no, Claire, I think you're a liar and you've got errors of judgment and, you know, this is all going to be a disaster. You know, so now what I do is I tip people off, you know, when you are thinking about selling and telling your staff, it would be worth thinking about confiding in one of your most positive and trustworthy team members so that they are primed to respond positively, because the moment that first response is positive, it's an easy win, that conversation.
Fantastic. Very good.
So I know that we're running against the clock here because of Ash has got to try and battle his way back up north again. You're 7 months-ish into the ownership, you're in the earnout. How's it going?
Well, it's great, but if you don't mind, there's 3 other things I wanted to say. So very, very quickly, what I just wanted to say is this, is that no matter how organised you are, there are going to be major hitches in your sale that only come to light as you go through the due diligence process. And the 3 things that happened to me, despite being super organised, was when I read my lease, because I was going to become the landlord of the premises, I looked at my lease and my lease had been drawn out as a residential lease and it had a clause in it that said you could only rent it on a 3-year basis. which is absolutely no good when you're negotiating commercial rent of a 10-year lease with a 5-year break clause. Yeah. So I thought I'd just lost the whole value of my business. And in order to get that lease altered, I had to go to the managing agents and they had to ask the chair of the freehold company to make a variation in the lease for me. And I thought, oh, how much is this going to cost? You know, I thought it could cost thousands. However, he was a kind person, signed it unhesitatingly. The second thing that happened to me is that when the net asset value statement was revealed to me as we approached the end of the sale, it was €150,000 short because I had been messing around as we approached Brexit and I had shifted some cash from sterling into a euros account that I'd never told my accountant about. You know, so I'm in this meeting and I have to say to my accountant, well, actually, I've just discovered €150,000 down the back of the sofa that had to go on the NAV statement. And then, of course, quite rightly, Dentex said, well, we can't acquire a business that's got euros. You're going to have to either change them back, you know, or you're going to have to transfer them out. But the problem is I've turned out to be the most rubbish currency trader of all time because I can't remember when I bought them, what the trading was, how much I actually exchanged. I don't know whether I made 15,000 or lost 15,000, but I wasn't willing to cash in to crystallize my loss. So I then messed around having to open up a Euros account with Barclays that took a few weeks to shift them out of the practice. And then the final thing that happened, which was horrifying, I was in the final meeting. It was like the week before we were due to complete. And I'm with my lawyer, I'm with Dentex and their lawyers. And their lawyer dialed into company's house and said, oh, Claire, you've got a share missing from your company. And this was the moment I remembered that there had been a name on a share certificate for Claire Nightingale Limited on the incorporation certificate that I didn't recognize. And I made an assumption, and we know what assume acronym stands for,
yeah,
that this person was someone who had had from whom I had acquired a shell company, and this was the name of the previous owner. You see, I never asked the questions. I never said, who is this person? And it turned out 10 years later that someone I didn't know actually owned a 1% share in my trading company. And in order to track this person down, my lawyer had to go back to an accountant of 10 years before who had set up the company. He had to go to the person who had from whom he had acquired the shell company. That person had to find their previous employee, who then had to sign a paperwork to waive the return their share to me. Now, you think that what could that have cost me? You know, what if my accountant was untraceable or that person was untraceable? Anyway, so those were three really big curveballs.
Fantastic. Amazing.
My way.
Chris, I don't know about you. I'm absolutely knackered listening to this.
It is actually exhausting, Claire. And and what I mean by that is that, you know, it's just your resilience that actually, no matter what they bloody throw at you, you just keep bouncing back. The original Mrs. Weeble.
Weeble, yeah. So we know that Ashley needs to get on the road. So I'll wrap up very quickly. So we finally got to the stage. I kept having deadlines. I wanted to finish on the 30th.
Guys,
you know, you're off, Ashley.
I've got to go. Yeah, seriously, because I'm on a really tight schedule up here. So,
you jump on road, mate. I'm going to carry on talking to Claire for a few minutes.
Yeah, I've got to go because. But can I just say, I thoroughly enjoyed listening to the story, and as Chris just said, you just the resilience to keep going is just amazing. So many lessons there. If you could just write the show notes for this thing as well, Claire, then that's it. We're done, aren't we, Chris?
In fact, do you want to take over the podcast? Because we're
not. Correct. Claire Nightingale, plus the two reds are better.
Claire, which football team do you support?
Oh, England.
England?
England. Yeah, what,
all right.
Can you be a United fan today? We can call it three reds are better than one.
No, I'm going to say two reds have buggered off and here's one white.
Yeah. Right. Take care.
That's not going to work, is it? Ashley, get on the road. Good luck.
Have a great holiday. Yeah.
All right. Claire, don't go away. Don't go away because we're not finished yet. So you're dealing with mop buckets. You're dealing with leases. You're dealing with currency exchange. You're dealing with missing business partners. Where is it all going to end?
Well, it ended happily, of course. You know, I mean, you know, the ridiculous thing was, I mean, talking about my impatience, you know, so I had this aspiration, of course, that we would complete on August 31st, because that would be the ninth anniversary of the day that I had bought the practice and I was sentimental. Right, so we missed that deadline. So then I'm like, right, I want to complete on October the 31st because it's my daughter's 18th birthday, and that will be another lovely kind of end to the, you know, given that her birth started my misery, her 18th birthday, we celebrate my success, you know, that came and went, you know, and it wasn't until December the 3rd, which was a Friday. And that night was the night of the staff Christmas party at Watford General Hospital. So I was going to be partying and I was so desperate to complete. And we were all desperate, you know, I mean, frankly, waiting till the Monday would have made absolutely no difference whatsoever. But I was absolutely, completely, utterly done in. And all I wanted to do was to know that it had been successful. And the thing that finally held us back was the fact that my lease variation hadn't quite been signed. So it's like 6:30 on a Friday night, and the managing agent is trying to get the head of the freehold company to sign the variation on the lease and then fax it to my lawyer. And at 7 o'clock at night, I'm sitting in this hotel room in my finery waiting to go to the party. There's a bottle of champagne on ice. My lawyer phones to say, that's it, we've completed. But what hadn't happened was the money hadn't come through. On Monday, because it was out of banking hours. So I said, what kind of lawyer are you? You've transferred my asset and I haven't got the cash, you know. But of course, I was joking because I knew it would all be fine, which it was. It was fine. And I felt a tremendous sense of happiness, which, of course, I'm reliving at this moment. You know, that my shoulders are lifting as I'm talking to you. But of course, you know, it's then what next? You know, what happened next? And I know you gave me a little pep talk about your experience of what happens, you know, and that some people are miserable when they've sold the practices. Well, I can tell you, I could not be happier. Every single day, I thank my lucky stars that I made those decisions at the right time, and I am so grateful. You know, I the practice has only got better, actually. You know, I love being supported by a business development manager. She's great. My practice receptionist, who's now my manager, has absolutely blossomed into the role. And we've expanded. You know, we've now got a hygienist, a general dentist, we've got another orthodontic associate. So we are moving exactly as I hoped into the next stage of development, but within the umbrella of a bigger organisation. You know, as a consequence of my digitisation and winning best, most transformed practice in the UK and I Invisalign Awards in 2022, I'm now key opinion leader for dental monitoring. And Dentex asked me to be their leading orthodontics. So I'm now the clinical lead in orthodontics.
Yeah.
I've got a very narrow remit at the moment. It's to support digitization and support socializing. So both of which are my favorite thing. So what could be better? So there you go, Chris. That's the end of the story so far.
So you're enjoying your life owned by a corporate.
Yeah.
What is it that you think you're doing differently from the people who are not enjoying it?
Okay, so obviously I can only talk about why am I happy, you know. Yeah. So I am happy because I cashed in my chips before the marketplace changed.
Yeah.
Number one, I think you would, you know what's going on more than I do, but I don't think I'd get an offer today. So, you know, I am massively happy. Because I like collaborating and because I like being part of a team, I think that being a single-handed practitioner was a very time-limited experience for me anyway, and I felt quite lonely at the top of that pyramid. You know, so I like the fact that I'm now in a more lateral playing field with my staff. You know, we don't really have a pyramid anymore. We're lateral and we all really have a quite, you know, we all play a really important role in the success of the practice. So I like that. And, you know, and the second thing is, okay, so I'm going to say, you will find a quote that makes me know that I'm not original, because I never think I say anything original. But I would summarise now my approach after a lifetime of working is that I learn from the past, I look to the future, but I live in the present.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So what's next?
What's next? Well, I want the practice. I mean, we all need the practice to be less about me. So, you know, I want to support younger orthodontists with enthusiasm. So, hey, if there's any of you out there looking for an associate position and a beautiful practice in South West London, please contact us. You know, we need the next me. And then, you know, and then of course I'm looking towards a future which requires me to be less on site. You know, I would like, when I come to the end of my earnout, which will be in 2026, I would like to be treating patients exclusively with Invisalign, monitoring them remotely, and or perhaps not working, as we discussed with our last podcast. So there you go. Whatever. I hope the future is full of fun. Anyway, whatever.
Claire, absolutely fabulous. Thank you. Yet again, a tour de force. Yet again, pragmatic. Yet again, straight to the point, transparent, very, very authentic. Not an ego in sight. Not an Instagram post, likely. And but I think, you know, what it really boils down to is just bloody good advice.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so, because, you know, life just is not easy. It's not straightforward. But if you've got ambition and keep following your dreams and pick yourself up from the disappointments, you'll get there in the end. It'll just take a while.
Do you know what? I had an email this morning from a client who happens to be a female principal. And I'm going to paraphrase the email by saying, she said, I've completely lost my mojo. I'm sick to bloody death of it all. It's all going tits up. I've just lost my energy. And it's almost like, do you know what? I'm going to fast track this interview and make sure that she gets a copy of it to say, you know what, there's hope. Just keep on keeping on, because if you do that, there's absolute hope. Claire Nightingale, thank you.
You're very welcome.
As always, if anybody wants to hear you speak, have you got any speaking engagements coming up, BOS wise and stuff like that?
Yes, I'm doing two presentations at the British Orthodontic Conference in September. One on treating teenagers with Invisalign, and the other on in the Driving Private Practice Forum on transformation of the practice with dental monitoring and
there how
winning practice.
So big recommend from Chris Barrow. If you're at the BOS, go and listen to Claire speak, because you know what, she's really good on her feet, and she's a really good speaker, as we know, Claire, because that's how we first met, isn't it? You stopped me doing my emails. All right. Well, we do hope Ashley gets to where he's going. And interestingly enough, I was in Nottingham yesterday with my old mate Colin Campbell, and my 90-minute drive home from Nottingham turned into 4 hours, courtesy of the A50 at Stoke. It sounds like Ashley's going to be having similar problems on the M6. We hope, fingers crossed, we hope he gets through. Claire, you got any holidays coming up?
Well, funnily enough, tomorrow night I'm getting on a flight to Uganda, and we are going gorilla trekking.
How utterly fabulous!
Followed by scuba diving in Mozambique, so it's another big one for us. Yeah,
exciting. There you go. Have an amazing trip, and thank you for sharing your insights with everybody. As is always the case, to our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this. If you have, please tell other people about it. The more that we can spread the good news, the better for all. And hope you, wherever you are, either have enjoyed a holiday, are enjoying a holiday, or have a holiday to look forward to during these few months where we can all just rest a little bit. We'll be back next month with the Two Reds podcast. For now, thanks for listening. Thank you, Claire.